Across Colorado, thousands of young people are unhoused. Some are staying in motels, others are crashing with friends. This month, KUNC's new series, Unseen But Everywhere, explores youth homelessness and education in Colorado. Reporter Ray Solomon takes us to the rural Eastern Plains, where school districts have few resources to help these families.
The first time Anthony Lankhorst lost his housing, he was 10 years old. Now he's 18. A lean, angular high school senior.
I've been in and out of homelessness. We once ended up in a wooden shack. That's where we stayed for a while. And then we went back to hotels, and it was just hotels from there on.
Most recently, he's been living with friends at a motel in Fort Morgan on the Eastern Plains. His parents are just a few doors down in the same building. On a frigid evening in January, their room is small, cluttered, and warm. His mom, Mary Grace Lankhorst, greets him with a sweet, nervous smile.
And then it just seems like every time we get our foot in the door and we just get up, something pulls a rug out, and we're right back to it.
They pay for the motel with money from a fast food job and from the streets. It's their latest stop in a long, tumultuous stretch of homelessness and housing insecurity. It all started years ago when Mary Grace got sick. The medical debt piled up, and they lost their home.
It went kind of gnarly for me because it would just take me down and down, and I would feel suicidal, sad, like other stuff like that, and it just, like, it was hard.
Mary Grace says the instability was also hard on her two younger kids, who are now 14 and 11. Over the years, the family has lived in trailers. They've crashed with relatives and friends. One night, they even bedded down in a car wash. Along the way, there were a couple glorious stretches of stability, like that one time they got into a house on the edge of Fort Morgan. Mary Grace was thrilled.
I ran through the house, switching on and off all the light switches and turning on and off the faucets and stuff you didn't get to do because you didn't have it. And I laid down on the carpet with my hands in the carpet going, oh God, I miss carpet.
But those times didn't last. Through it all, Mary Grace says she's tried to make her kids' education a priority.
It's important for me that my children do good in school. It's very important.
But the reality of living in a constant state of crisis has made that difficult in practice, and they are not alone. According to state data, more than 16,000 kids experienced some form of homelessness in Colorado during the 2021-2022 school year, and they are much more likely to drop out. Many rural school districts are particularly hard hit and particularly short on resources. In Fort Morgan, for instance, more than one out of every 10 students experienced housing insecurity during the 2019-2020 school year.
Even though youth homelessness is just as prevalent in rural communities as it is in urban communities, it's much more hidden in rural areas.
Erin Dvorakarian is a researcher at the University of Chicago's Chapin Hall.
People are less likely to see it. Not as many young people stay in shelters. They're more likely to be on couches, inside vehicles, or outdoors in more secluded spaces.
Across Colorado's rural Eastern Plains, there are no youth shelters.
A lot of our high schoolers couch surf. Elementary age, sometimes they're with their parents and they just stay in their vehicles. Those are rough.
Cindy Reyes is family community advocate for the school system in Sterling, another rural community on Colorado's Eastern Plains. Part of her job is providing unhoused kids with the basics.
We try to keep clothing at school, extra clothing for them. We make sure that they have the food that they possibly need, the blankets, those kind of things, sleeping bags, backpacks, full of necessities.
She says right now she's got a roster of 40 to 60 kids currently experiencing homelessness in the Sterling schools. And she's constantly identifying new ones, sometimes two or three kids in a single day. Her annual budget for helping all those kids, $50.
That isn't per student. That is the budget completely for the homeless for the year, was $50.
That's the minimum required by federal law. So Reyes has become an expert at piecing things together from nothing.
So then my next job is to, okay, we got to get this figured out. I start calling around, trying to find resources when I can. Sometimes that's not easy.
Calling around, asking local nonprofits, or even her own friends and family members for donations, In many parts of rural Colorado, this is the system for helping unhoused kids. Occasionally, it's enough, and Reyes can spend her scant resources on graduation caps and gowns.
And that is the most awesome thing, to see them actually graduate. That's a big thing to me. You don't have a lot of them that do that. There he is.
Later in the evening, back in Fort Morgan, Mary Grace Langhorst's younger son, Lucas, stops by the motel room to see his parents.
You look tired, dude.
I am. I was just playing basketball at the field house.
Oh.
Lucas is a quiet kid who likes to take in stray cats. He wears his long hair hidden under a dark hoodie. Lucas was just 6 years old when their struggles with housing began. Now he's almost 15.
I'm a freshman.
Lucas has been living at a friend's house nearby. The internet is better over there, which is important because he attends an online school. When Lucas was in seventh grade, classmates started bullying him. They'd make fun of how he looked, how he dressed. He'd get pushed around and punched.
It was about me. It was about the homeless stuff.
He started to hate school and wanted to leave. In the small Fort Morgan school district, changing schools wasn't on the table, so Lucas's mom enrolled him in online learning. She did the same for her older son, Anthony. The change hasn't exactly been smooth, as Anthony tells me over the phone.
I ended up losing internet, so I wasn't able to do my schoolwork, so they kicked me out.
That disrupted his education for months. Even so, Anthony says he's on track to graduate in the spring. But he also just landed a job at the big meatpacking plant in town.
I go to work at 2, and then the school ends at 2. So what I'll do is, after school, I'll go straight to work.
This double shift will mean very long days for the teenager. But the money is good, and his goal is to secure a home for his family. He wants to keep them out of motels for good. In Fort Morgan, I'm Ray Solomon, KUNC.
College life is not all grades, dorm rooms, and cafeteria food for a significant number of students. Nearly half report trouble paying rent and utilities. Some are without housing, arriving to class from a parked car or a friend's couch. This month, KUNC's new series, Unseen But Everywhere, explores homelessness and education in northern Colorado. KUNC's Emma Vandenende reports from Fort Collins about what it looks like to try to get a degree without a stable place to live.
Oscar Godinez Avila's bedroom is what you'd expect a college student's space to look like. A full laundry basket, books everywhere, and a big Colorado flag on the wall.
It's a bit of a disaster.
His tiny room in his older apartment has all the regular knickknacks and essentials, except for a bed.
I use a rollout mat. After moving so much, so often, I learned it's just impractical to have a big bed.
The 25-year-old senior takes out his sheets and pillows and puts them on the floor. He's used to this. Godinez Avila grew up in Colorado and lived in multiple towns, usually staying in one-bedroom apartments. He would sleep with his siblings in the living room. His family was poor. Godinez Avila makes the point with this one specific memory about his backpack.
If we could only afford the standard, like, one color ones, and then I see other kids walking around with, like, Super Mario or, like, some other pop character on there, that was also really, that was a bit hard for me.
Still, Godinez Avila wanted an education and received a small scholarship to attend Colorado State University. But when he could not afford to stay in the dorms, that's when his housing instability really started. For the past couple of years, he'd stay with friends.
They were kind enough to let me be on their couch while I figured out something more permanent. Unfortunately, that usually just meant I needed to find another couch.
He'd sometimes use the sinks on campus to clean up. He'd skip breakfast because he had no place to store his food. He was always working or doing homework. He felt different.
It felt like everybody here had money, everybody here had a heritage and a legacy to build off of, and I was just left really confused.
Godinez Avila isn't the only one. A recent survey of 200 colleges, most of which were community colleges, found that nearly half of students who responded struggled with paying rent or utilities. 1 in 7 said they were homeless at some point. Experts say these numbers are an undercount.
Because those are the survivors, so to speak. Those are the ones who were able to have enough financial strength, right, to stay in college despite the fact that everything was pushing them out.
That's Sarah Goldrick-Rabb, a sociologist and the former director of the Hope Center at Temple University, which created the survey. Universities in Colorado don't have much data on these students. A recent CSU survey had a very low response rate. The University of Northern Colorado only has numbers in the teens, and the University of Colorado Boulder doesn't count students at all. And while these universities offer food pantries and emergency aid, a stable housing system is still not in place.
They need to be able to pay their rent, or they're not going to come to college. And if they are, they're going to fail back out really fast, not because they're not good in school, but because they don't have the time and energy to be able to work to pay their bills on top of school.
Many of these students also suffer from mental health issues, medical conditions, and a lack of transportation. PJ Travin is the assistant director at Gateway to College in Westminster, a program that helps students finish high school and earn college credits. He says addressing these needs with laptops and bus passes, for example, can make that degree more attainable.
It's a great reward to see these students come through and totally like crush it in the college world because they were given some resources. Oh, wow, they have a way to get to school every day now. Well, great. They're a great student. They just had to get here, right?
One organization at CSU is trying to help fill in the gap. Oscar Godinez Avila and a few other students trickle into the kitchen at Lumen, the Lutheran ministry just across the street from CSU. They're serving chili.
How was y'all's break?
It was pretty good. How was yours?
In addition to free meals, Lumen provides housing. It subsidizes 20 bedrooms in a nearby apartment complex for just under $400 a month, and they get to stay there until they graduate. Pastor Paul Judson leads the housing initiative.
Housing just makes a difference. It just brings stability to a person's life to where they can move on from that and accomplish goals and hopes and dreams.
Students fill out a form, and then they have a discussion, detailing if they have any generational wealth and where they would live if they don't get in. Lumen organizers have heard it all, from students sleeping in their cars to several crowding into a studio apartment. Abdu Tabib is a senior studying biology who attends the Lumen dinners. He's slept everywhere around Fort Collins, from the streets to store bathrooms.
But the safest one was CVS. And I hate to have to say this, but this is reality and I have nothing to be ashamed of because anyone else would have done the same thing to survive.
Despite these difficult circumstances, Lumen organizers are not able to house everyone who applies. Here's Donna Lopez, who helps with the initiative.
I think the hardest part for all of us is after we decide and we go through and we realize who we're going to take is realizing we took 20, but we had 60 applications.
But for the students who get these resources, like Oscar Godinez Avila, it makes a difference.
I like knowing that I'm in a space where we have a shared sense of perseverance and resilience and struggle.
Back at his apartment, Godinez Avila is cleaning and loading up his school supplies in his new backpack. This one finally has a pattern, brown with white spots. It has blue straps as an accent.
This is the most expensive backpack I've ever bought. I wanted a good quality bag for once, and dang, Nana, I got it.
He has been able to afford nicer things since he was accepted into Lumen Housing last fall. He says having his housing subsidized has been a huge weight off his shoulders. He finally had the time to talk to mentors and the money to consider an internship over a minimum wage job.
So I feel like that's the first semester I really started to thrive because for once that obstacle wasn't present.
Life isn't perfect for Godinez Avila. He still relies on the campus food pantry and he's unsure what housing will look like when he graduates. He's grateful for the resources he got.
Housing insecurity and food insecurity should not in any way, shape, or form be any sort of norm for any college student. It's insane to be trying to navigate modern life without these resources.
Now, Godinez Avila plans to pursue a master's degree, something he wouldn't have dreamed of when he was still on his parents' living room floor. In Fort Collins, I'm Emma Vandenhainde for KUNC.
Over the past year, tens of thousands of migrants from the U.S.-Mexico border have arrived in Denver. Some of their kids have joined the school system. Many others haven't. In the final installment of KUNC's new series, Unseen But Everywhere, Lucas Brady Woods reports on the slew of barriers standing in their way, especially housing insecurity.
One icy January morning in East Denver, 10-year-old Camila crunched down the sidewalk to school in her puffy coat and oversized backpack. It's a little heavy with papers they gave me at school, she says. Her mind was on a math test coming up that day. I don't have a computer, so it's more complicated because I have to add, subtract, and multiply on paper. Camila and her 8-year-old sister, Daleshka, grew up in Venezuela. Now they're among the thousands of migrants joining Denver Public Schools, and they love their teacher. She speaks two languages, Spanish and English, she says. Just a few blocks from their East Denver apartment, the girls arrive at school and give their mom, Roxana, a quick hug goodbye. She beams as she watches them head inside with their classmates. Now they have class, Roxana says. Let them go about their day and learn. We're not using the family's last name to protect their privacy. They arrived here in September from Venezuela after a grueling 3-month, almost 7,000-mile journey across jungles, mountains, deserts, and rivers. They fled economic inflation, few job opportunities, and violence. Their father, Darwin, was shot and wounded while taking money out of an ATM. After school drop-off, Darwin explains the main reason they left was the lack of basic education. In Venezuela, children don't have access to education because of the current crisis. There isn't anything, no pencil sharpeners, no pencils. Here, everything is different. Almost 40,000 migrants have arrived in Denver over the past year. Now, their children need to start their education in Colorado. But housing is scarce, and kids who don't have a stable place to live can struggle with school. This is a pivotal moment for these kids. Johan Liljengren is the Colorado Department of Education's head of dropout prevention. He says regular school attendance in early grades matters down the road.
Students who do graduate from high school, we see a lot of different life outcomes. So much less likely to be involved in juvenile justice, more likely to have better health outcomes, higher earnings over the course of their lifetime.
In Colorado, the vast majority of new migrants have ended up in Denver Public Schools. More than 3,200 have enrolled since last summer, and most are concentrated in a handful of the district schools. Esther Rivera guides new families through the enrollment process. She says they deal with a variety of overlapping challenges.
Language is a barrier, transportation is a barrier, childcare is a barrier. Like, a lot of things have to almost come together all at the same time in order for you to enroll your kid in school or get a job or get housed.
State data shows that non-English speaking students are twice as likely to drop out as their peers. Data on this newest group of migrants is limited. A lack of stable housing is a huge challenge. Kids who are moving around might be too stressed to focus in school, and they may have no reliable way to get there. Still, Rivera says kids can enroll no matter what their living situation is. She describes a hierarchy of competing needs.
So they can first focus on getting work and then housing, and then they know where they're going to be, and then they can get enrolled.
Meanwhile, housing instability persists. Due to budget constraints, the city has imposed a 42-day limit on how long families can stay in shelters. A converted hotel in East Denver is one of these shelters. Many residents have been prioritizing the search for work and housing. One of them, Paula, arrived from Venezuela in November. She has 3 kids, ages 2, 8, and 12. I want them to study, she says, but I haven't enrolled them. She also says they can't pick a school until they know where they're going to live. And she can't afford a place to live without a job. We don't have a work permit, nor can we get one yet. How do you ensure they're stable at school? Many of these newcomers speak little to no English. That makes learning difficult for the students and makes it hard for families to understand information about support services and education. Arlene Bugstad is a professor of social work at the University of Colorado who works with immigrant children. She says housing provides an important support system.
Often folks will live in apartment buildings with other people who speak their language, and they can foster this a sense of belonging and not have this constant worry of what is tomorrow going to look like.
Similarly, for 10-year-old Camila and her family, their East Denver Elementary School is about more than education. It provides a safe place for the girls to spend their days while Darwin and Roxana work long hours. We arrived with a goal of improving ourselves, to get out of the poverty that we came from, and we've achieved it, thanks to God, our strength, our work, and the friends who have helped us. Darwin and Roxana were fortunate. They found their one-bedroom apartment through a Denver nonprofit organization that helps new immigrants. Others won't be so lucky. The city says nearly 4,000 people are set to lose shelter housing by the end of March. For KUNC, I'm Lucas Brady Woods in Denver.
To read and listen to our entire series, Unseen But Everywhere, go to KUNC.org.